hockey.
Yeah.
My favorite.
It's Judd's Hockey Show.
And it is Judd's Hockey Show, Sunday afternoon edition, Wild 4, Blackhawks nothing. Plenty to get to. It's Judd, it's Jesse Pierce, ordinarily on Wednesdays, but she had time today, so she joins us for this post-game show. What do you know? Jesse, you're live, so say hi to your adoring public.
Hi, guys. How are we?
And AJ Fredrickson, always looking absolutely wonderful, even on a Sunday. All right. All right. I'm full of compliments today. I'm full of compliments. All right, so let's go back. Let's flash back to January 10th. I want to go back to a game in Dallas, Texas, where Jesper Wallstedt started his first NHL regular season game in a very tough environment against a very good Stars team and gave up 7 goals on 27 shots. Not all his fault. I mean, he had a bad game, but the team had a terrible game. 7-2 loss, and that was, until today, the lasting impression. I, of course, am critical of this team a lot. Jesse, AJ as well. But I will say this. When I heard the news that Wallstedt was being called up and then John Hines confirmed off your question in the postgame press conference yesterday, Jesse, that Wallstedt would start this game, I thought that is absolutely perfect. So today, 24 shots, a shutout. The Blackhawks are terrible. I don't care about that part of it. I thought that this was a great idea. And I don't know how much more he's going to play. He's definitely going to stick around. So he will play more. But I thought, for as unfair as that January 10th game probably was, Jess, I thought this was absolutely a perfect time to plug in Wallstedt and to sort of turn your attention to the future, but also set him up to succeed.
Play the young guys, for the love of. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if he had held out some of the bigger names today. I would have been absolutely okay with that. Obviously, Ryan Hartman came back, Adam Beckman, the odd man out, but I would have liked to see maybe somebody else. I want to see these young guys from here on out. Yep. There's nothing left to play for except pride, which certainly, yes, you want to do, but I want to see the young guys. I'm excited for Jesper. I hope he's excited to be here and get this opportunity. And again, the guys played much better in front of him again against a very lowly foe in the Chicago Blackhawks. But yeah, I want to see more of that. I know we had asked in the postgame presser to John Hines yesterday, are we going to maybe see some defensemen recalled? Are you going to see these different things? Because you're absolutely right, Judd. There's no more. Will they make the playoffs? No. They're done. Cut it out. And we're just going to move forward and look toward next year. And next year, we'll rely heavily on some of these younger guys. So let's get them in, get them some NHL time so they're even better equipped to head into training camp next fall.
Age, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, play the young guys. There's no reason not to at this point. I'm sure we're going to get to it at some point here, but I'm already seeing stuff in the chat saying, like, why is Marcus Johansson still getting top six and even top line minutes at times? It's a puzzle to me. I don't know what is going on in the mind of John Hines and the coaching staff when they write that score or that line chart every day in the locker room, but there's no reason to not lean on a guy like Jesper Wallstedt the rest of the way. Sure, you know what you have in Marc-Andre Fleury. It's a matter of kind of whether he wants to come back for another season or not. This season there's no heroic performance that he can do in goal that's going to propel you to the playoffs. If you want to do a little yard sale, you know, display what you have in the goods of Philip Gustafson. Absolutely. Go ahead. Get him in goal. He's played a little bit better here down the stretch, but there's no reason you shouldn't give a handful of games remaining to Jesper Wallstedt. Nice bounce back from him today. And let's get some of these other younger guys up. I have no problem getting some of the vets out on the golf course a little earlier this year. I don't mind it. Plus, as we're seeing as well, lose is some of the mentions in the chat here. And I don't mind that whatsoever. You're jockeying for draft positioning at this point. So,
yeah. And you know what? The Blackhawks, you can't possibly lose. Like, they're so bad, you can't lose.
Yeah.
So like, I can't get worked up because, I mean, they are absolutely pathetic and terrible. So I'm correct in saying, though, that what we're seeing here feels like, if you were to put the puzzle together, it is a potential get Fleury back, trade Gus, look, see, right? Like that's what this is, correct, Jesse? I don't think it goes more than that. Now, if you know that Flower's going to retire, that's different. I don't think he's going to, though. So, like, we are looking at, can Wallstedt handle this now? Let's see what he can do with the big club, because there's a very good chance Gus gets dealt.
I mean, you could sense from Marc-Andre Fleury when Filip Gustavsson got hurt and he came in and he stepped in and played huge for the Minnesota Wild when he hadn't been expected to, that that fire was reignited in him. And last night when we had talked about him missing the playoffs for the first time, obviously, in his career, you could see that he is not going to be satisfied going out like this. He's okay. He wants to be in Minnesota, as he expressed to NHL.com last week. But yeah, I think there's no question he wants to come back. He wants to create something more than what is left this year. And yeah, I think you reevaluate the Filip Gustavsson situation. You look at what you can get for him. 3 years at $3.75 million is just a lot. And you can really, you know, he's hang your hat on a little bit. He's performed well. He's passed the eye test the past couple starts. But still, there's been some softies. You look at the game against Denver the other night. It just isn't enough. And I don't love it. So I'd like to reevaluate that. I'd like to see him gone. I'd like Marc-Andre Fleury and Jesper to be the two guys next year. So Billy, please, let's just listen to me for once on my goalie situation and move forward with that. And I also, a little birdie had told me within the organization that, again, there is concern about Filip Gustavsson and his eating habits and some of his off-ice habits. He's not quite treating it as professional as he needs to be. And that had been a concern for him coming into camp last year. He needed to come into camp in shape. And there are still some of those things. Yes, he's young, but that could also hurt him in the long run. Is he willing to make that commitment to be this goaltender that the Minnesota Wild want him to be? And that's just been the big question mark for him since he's arrived here in Minnesota.
And plus, age, I think it's perfect too, because like, I don't expect, it's not that the Wild can't make the playoffs next season, but like, that's the last year of cap hell. So I don't expect him to be great. No. So to what Jesse is saying as well, I think the Fleury Volstead combination is perfect, because it like allows him to play more. And like, you need to see at some point. And I know that we can torture this into goalies. You shouldn't play a goalie till he's 24 now or some crazy thing, but it just feels like for the last year of being in cap hell, that combination would be perfect. And I just don't know that I trust Gus now. Like what Jess said is a whole different problem, but I'm just saying as far as the trust goes. So I do think that the Volstead Fleury potential combo would be a really, really good idea for the growth of the young man. Don't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's,
you gotta flick that mic. Right
there. Yeah. But the trust thing there, I think, is interesting, because we've seen maybe a lack of trust at times with some of the younger guys on the, like, that play up us, some of the skaters, some of the forwards, that you're now seeing maybe they're getting handed a little bit of a bigger role in this later part of the season. Is it because they know they're kind of out of the mix? Is it because they're gaining trust? That's a conversation for another day. But it depends on how much trust and how much belief they have in this guy behind closed doors in the front office of Minnesota Wild. Because if you get rid of Gus and it is a Marc-Andre Fleury Volstead tandem,
yep,
I don't think anybody's going into next season expecting Marc-Andre Fleury to bear any bulk of the weight whatsoever. Like it should be similar to almost what you expected with Gustavsson this year, where Volstead is going to be your number one, even though he is going to be a rookie. And I love it's the mentorship, it's the leader, it's what he can learn from a Hall of Famer and Marc-Andre Fleury. But I also don't think that you want to thrust him into that spotlight and put everything on him immediately, because those spotlights could be like you get pulled over and the cops put it right in your rearview mirror and then you're blinded. So, you know, it's the worst. So you want to push him out there and you want to test the waters, but you also don't want to throw him in without a life jacket. So that's it really comes down to what Bill Guerin, what John Hines expect and what maybe they feel and have seen. And who knows, maybe we get a little glimpse of that. The Hawks are not the biggest test. I mean, you saw how lackluster both teams kind of look today at times. It's, you know, it's the end of the season. Nobody really cares. So, it's different from next October ramping up. Everybody is back in the spring of things and, you know, everybody has belief again. So we'll have to see how that goes.
But Jess, I would say this, I definitely would advocate signing a goaltender. I just would be okay with trading Gus. And if that goaltender happens to bounce up and down, I also don't care. Like I do think that if we're going to be realistic about the 2024-25 season, I do think that that approach would work. Like if anybody is going into next year with, this is where they turn it around, this is where they're really going to be good, I think it's premature. I think that they could definitely show growth, But yeah, I'm not advocating that you don't get another goaltender to be there just in case. I'm just saying if you bring Gustafson back, he's going to expect something. And I'm not sure I want to commit to, I think I would prefer the backup and Fleury to help out the young man. Then Fleury is let go. And now it's Gus and Volstead, and both of them, or at least Gus, is expecting I'm going to play a ton. And the reality is that's not my preference. So bring in a goaltender, not saying that. I just think trading Gus makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, it really does. I will be honest, I guess, if, you know, brass tacks comes down to it, I don't hate the tandem of Gus and Fleury returning next year and keeping Jesper down in Iowa another year. That's not something that I would be absolutely, oh my gosh, what is Bill Guerin doing? I would be, you know, okay, but preference would be to look at what you can get for Philip Gustafson, because there are still teams that need goaltenders. He'd probably be fairly affordable for those teams. As we all know, like quarterbacks, you overpay for goalies quite often, and that's just kind of what happens. But it puts Bill Guerin in a very interesting predicament, because again, when he made that decision to extend Gus this offseason, I think everybody was like, okay, he's the guy. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to just move on his way out. Great internet connection. Shout out to the Hubs for getting that going.
Way to go.
It's just beautiful. Look at that.
Way
support.
To go.
But yeah, I mean, that's the big thing, is who is available? Do you bring in another young guy? Do you bring in an unproven guy? I mean, I think if you're going to go for a goalie, you need to have somebody that you can trust, another kind of a veteran presence, maybe, if that's what you're looking at to help out, somebody that you absolutely trust. And Philip Gustafson, as you said earlier, Judd, the trust just ain't there.
All right, Jesse. So you're our expert on this, because you do cover this team on a daily basis for the league website. You broached this. So tell us more. Who do you want? So there's six games left, right? Five games left. Yeah, there's five games left. Four on the road trip now, and one at home to finish the season against the Kraken. Who else would you like to see get a chance now? So, like, if we're going to go down this path and you're going to scratch some guys, and at this point in time, who cares? Who else do you think deserves a shot, or would you personally like to see? And let's start guys that they could potentially, and I don't know what the cap implications are now. I would guess that there's room because of where things are in the season. But if they're going to call a guy 2-3 up, who would you suggest, if Bill Guerin and John Hines sat you down and said, who do you think that we should call up? What names can you give me?
Give me some defensemen, baby, because I don't think anybody's going to be crying over number 4 or number 33 sitting up in the press box for a couple games, right? I'm sorry. It is what it is. Damon Hunt, Carson Lambos, I'd like to see them back there on the blue line again. We've heard their names for years now. We've seen a little bit from Damon Hunt up here. Not bad, not great, just kind of there again, given the opportunity that he was. Carson Lambos, we still have yet to see, and I think he has a really good offensive prowess that Minnesota could bring. And then, you know what? Let's give Sammy Walker another look, or let's give another forward another look. You know, I was very unimpressed with Sammy's recent NHL stint earlier this year. I know everybody was, he was the little darling of all of us last year, but I want to see, is he really this NHL player that you think he can be, or is he going to be a very, very good American Hockey League player? I think the only way you find that out is by giving him a shot, because again, I want to see these young guys. Now, technically, again, Minnesota not eliminated. Had they lost in regulation, they would have been eliminated today. So I can see John Hines pushing this out just a little bit. He's going to. He's going to be like, guys,
no, stop it,
we're
John.
Not going to be the reason that we lose. Definitely bigger D. Always go bigger on D. But, you know, we talked about talked about size earlier this week on Wednesday, though. I mean, Minnesota's just a small, small team. So yes, certainly grab some size back on D, but I definitely would do that. I'd do Hunt, Lambos, and maybe Sammy Walker, or another forward that could, you know, just prove to be an offensive spark, because I've liked what the fourth line has done the majority of the night. And those are, in fact, your Iowa guys. So that's what I would do.
Who do you see, AJ?
The defense is my main thing, because I feel like that's going to be where this team is going to have to shift towards here next year, is like maybe kind of reinvigorating this defensive core. And so Damon Hunt, Carson Lambos are at the top of my list. Just to get a little bit of a fresh face and see what they have to offer. So you can get, you know, a little bit of that appetizer kind of sampler platter. So, you know, heading into, like, there's only so much you can tell, I feel like, by their game at the AHL level. Marco Rossi, we saw him prove it down there, and it took a little bit to maybe rise to the occasion at the NHL level. He's obviously having a breakout year this year, and I think he's really coming into his game. But when it comes to the defense, like, same thing. You're adjusting to playing against the top players in the world on a night-to-night basis. Can you maintain your spot along the blue line? And I think bringing up a guy like Hunter Lambos is able to do that. If you can see, like, maybe they're just shell-shocked. And I wouldn't press the panic button over these last five games. Don't get me wrong, but maybe that sways the way that they enter the NHL draft and maybe where they have their viewpoint. Not a best guy available. Maybe they pass on somebody at 14th overall and reach on somebody who would go a couple picks later just to address a defensive situation.
Mm-hmm. And I think the smart thing there too is just to potentially get guys like that experience here, right? Like into two games and I'm with Jess totally. This team needs to get, especially on the blue line, bigger. And I think some people think that I'm like advocating for fighters. I'm not talking about guys that can fight. I'm talking about guys that can stand up at, like, you look at the teams that are successful and they have, you know, big defensemen. The Wild is small and they're 6 foot or more guys, aside from Jake, don't exactly play big. I mean, Brodin doesn't play big. I like him and he deserves a spot for sure. He's really, really good. But I mean, I want guys that can go into corners, come out with pucks, that can physically beat up guys. I want a team. I mean, I thought what the Jets did to Kaprizov again on Saturday was so indicative. And that's not about fighting. That's about, there's nobody on now with Marcus out. Nobody scares you, Jesse. And my problem too is, and we talked about this, I think on the last show that we all did together, is, you know, with Marcus, he's sort of breaking down. Like, you can't bring him back next year, which he's going to come back, but you can't just say, okay, you fight every fight.
Right.
Like, he can't do that anymore. He's breaking down. He's getting older. His body is breaking down. So, like, I'm not advocating go get Ryan Reeves and go get DeLaurier back and go get. I am honestly asking, you got to get, how are you going to get bigger, more physical defensively to match up with teams? Because in no way, shape, or form does forget the skill for a second. The size of the Wild is not a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. They're just not. They're a small team, gets pushed around. And, you know, right now you can kick the ever-loving crap out of Kaprizov and no one's going to do a thing. And the opposing team knows that you basically have no teeth.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that would be one big challenge I have for Brock Faber. And one area that I think that he could improve upon is adding some body mass and really kind of adding that style into his game. I mean, don't get me wrong, he has done everything right and he's still so very young, but I think that would be a hyper focus for me, is making sure he can add on that muscle, add on some of that physicality, because he's still a young kid. It's a little bit easier for him to do. Matt Boldy, another one, because Matt Boldy already has the length within him, and I think just adding a little bit of that muscle mass will do tremendous things. As you mentioned, just getting that base down will be huge. We saw the difference it made for Marco Rossi's game. You see how it works for Kirill Kaprizov. You know, it's just, it's something that needs to happen. It's the way you transition into the NHL. You'd mentioned Marcus Foligno, nobody else. Mason Shaw is your next in line, quote unquote, tough guy. That ain't going to work, you guys. Like, that is just not something that is going to work. Love Mason Shaw, love the way that he can play, but that shouldn't be his role. And again, you're right, it's not about going out and getting enforcers per se, but you need a physical element. And especially when it comes to playoffs, and, you know, hopefully Minnesota can make a better push at it next year, though my hopes are not that high either, because it is the last year of that dead cap.
Right.
You need to have that physical presence to have any shot at advancing past the first round.
What was your guys' thoughts on this too? I found it very interesting, and I didn't hate it, but I guess I had a little bit of an objection to it. I thought Hines post game after the Jets game Saturday was incredibly interesting. Like, he went after the team. He basically said our secondary guys weren't good enough, blah, blah, blah. Here's my issue though. I understand what he's saying and I appreciate he's trying to light fires to a certain degree, and I don't blame him, but how do you say that with a straight face when Marcus Johansson, who AJ brought up at the top of the show, is gliding his way into every corner, avoiding hits like it's the plague? I'm sorry, but if I'm a third or fourth line guy and I hear that, and John Hines, like, our secondary guys, I'm thinking to myself, what's he talking about? Like, this guy is, I mean, I want him out. I want him out of that room. I want him out off the team. Like, I, you know what? Goudreau's, at the end of the day, God bless him, he scored.
He scored.
And I'm glad for him. And at the end of the day, I'm going to cut him slack. I just don't think he's that good, but I think he works his ass off. Like, I don't watch him and think, there goes a lazy lout who's cashing in on his contract. I think there goes a guy that didn't deserve the contract he got, but he's not, but it's not for a lack of effort, right? Like, I've never looked at, I do watch him go and go, he's not that good, but that's a whole different, that's a different ball of wax. Marcus Johansson, I watch him, and then I hear John Hines, like, go after, or I watch, you know, Zuccarello has not scored a goal, you guys, and I know he got an assist today, or a couple of assists. He's not scored a goal in 18 games. I don't know if he whined his way back on to Kirill's line. And what was the flyby he did? Was that in the game against Vegas at center ice, mm-hmm. where they scored the tying goal? Literally, he just sort of gave up. I don't know what he was doing. I guess I have a little bit of a problem with, if you're gonna pick on people, pick on the whole team. Because if I am watching Zuccarello play, and basically he thinks he's Gretzky, and if I'm watching Johansson play and you're picking on me, I'm like, how's, you know, it seemed very, AJ, it seemed very old school, this team, where we pick on those who can't defend themselves and we protect those who deserve to be picked on. It was very, if I had to pick a word, Yozenian to me.
Yozenian.
It was very, like, Yozenian. That. I'm picking on people because I know I can.
Yeah. The thing about his comments after the game yesterday is like, yeah, I get it. Yeah, you gotta, I understand. And you have to call people out, but there's, at the time, there's 6 games left in the season. Like, what fires, what, let's send a message. If you're really that upset about it, you clearly have a list. You clearly have ideas in your mind and can picture the faces of the guys that you're probably talking about. What's stopping you from just phoning it in here and saying, you know what, Mojo, don't even bother putting your gear on today. Head up to the top. Go grab a hot dog. Go sit next to Billy G and watch the game. Have fun.
Popcorn.
Like, it doesn't make sense why you're. And if he's not talking about a guy like Johansson, I would love to know who he's talking about, because and that's the thing that also is a conundrum to me. Like, I think it's pretty clear. The writing is on the wall in bright red. It spells Johansson. I don't know why we're not taking action here. I love a good call to action, you know, but if we're not actually acting on our call, what's the point? It's just empty words. And then that makes me, as somebody who, you know, wants to, who sees you get like an immediate appointment after Evison's relief, why am I now, like, I'm not able to, like, take what you're saying to truth. It makes me feel like what you're saying just has really no meaning, and it's just lip service. Take some action, John Hines. I don't want to see Marcus Johansson on the ice the rest of the season. And this would be far too late at this point, 5 games left.
The amount of times I have directly asked John Hines, how do you measure Marcus Johansson's game? How do you think he's performed? Blah, blah, blah. And the only word that John Hines consistently uses is he's effective. And I want to be like, he's effective at nothing. He's effective at being bad at ice hockey. And that's fantastic. Marcus Johansson, you guys, and this isn't because we've been griping about him for weeks, but let's pull up some stats to go along with it. He's minus 13 this year, minus 63 in his career, right? The weirdest thing about this is, though, as I looked at his TOI in the past couple games, he's actually increased. He saw a 17-minute shift the other night, almost 18 minutes the past 2 games, and that's up from like 13 minutes in ice shift on average. So it's kind of weird. Like, are you showcasing the guy? Like, hey, here, come take this. Like, is that a thing that we're doing? Because otherwise there is nothing else that yields him to be on the ice, let alone in the top 6 at all. I'm kind of over, because you're right. Freddie Gaudreau tries, and I can appreciate that about a player. Marcus Johansson doesn't have enough skill to rely on just the skill alone. And it's kind of odd. Like, he just doesn't seem to fit. He's never really in the locker room with the guys. You don't see him around a lot. And I don't know if that's part of the problem, whereas, like, he just hasn't fully bought into this team. And I don't know the full dynamics. I'm just going based off of what I'm seeing. But it just, all of it, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, Billy G, in addition to looking at Gus, you need to shop Marcus Johansson. I think that's for the best for all of us. I can't do another year of this.
And I agree. And he's, in my opinion, he's counterproductive, because I think he sets a tone that nobody respects. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you can look at Gaudreau, if you're a good player, and be like, oh boy, not very good. But I don't think you disrespect him. Like, I don't think that, you know, Johansson's a guy who, and what drives me nuts is you can see at times he's got the skill. Like, that's what gets me. Gaudreau, you see who he is, and that's him. But, you know, Johansson's signature move, perimeter play, Perimeter play, pursue the puck along the boards. You get to the corner and you edge really hard, so you'll probably fall down so you can't get hit. He does it every single time. It's genius. He edges himself out of plays because then if he gets hit, it's just barely and he falls down and now he's not going to get hurt. Like you can see, he looks to me like he is afraid of contact, and that's a small problem in a game in which contact is paramount. All right, let's finish the show with three good things, okay? Hat trick of good things, because it's a Sunday and I'm in a great mood. Actually, I'm not. The first one is Kirill Kaprizov. Second consecutive two-goal game. This is his third 40-goal season, which might sound like, oh, that's nice, but Bally's, God bless him, showed a graphic, and I've got it right here because I took a picture of it. 40-goal seasons in Wild history, okay? Kaprizov had 47 in 21-22. Gabrick in 2007-08 had 42. Eric Staal in that bang-up year.
Yeah, remember that year?
Banger of a year for Stahlzy. 2017-18, 42 goals. Kaprizov, 22-23, 40 goals again this season. And that is all of the 40-goal seasons. And I actually, can I give you a slightly hot take? I'll start with Jesse here. This might be the most impressive one to me because of how long Kirill didn't look like Kirill. Mm-hmm. Like some of the years, and look, I mean, this has not been his best year, but, you know, he's been healthy, knock on wood, for entire seasons. And it's like, okay, this guy is absolutely incredible. I actually think that I have not seen him do nearly as many memorable things across the board this year because he's been hurt. He started off hurt. He clearly didn't get to train. I think this is the most impressive one because if you had told me in December that this guy was going to end up at like 45 goals or more, I would have told you, you're absolutely crazy. Is that a hot take?
No, because I would agree. I think most of us would agree. We could rewind the tapes and find all of the receipts about how every single one of us, media and fans included, said, what is wrong with Kirill? Oh, no, Kirill's regressing. Oh, no, is Kirill Kaprizov this or that? And it's funny, you go back and you look at his stats from the year, he was producing. He just wasn't scoring, right? And he's certainly a guy that's expected to score. But opening the season, he had 5 points in the first three games, and his first goal didn't come until three games in. Now, he did have a bit of a scoring drought, you know, in between October there, where he went 6 or 7 games without a goal at all and without a point, in fact. So, I mean, there were definitely struggles there. And as we recognize, it wasn't even just the scoring. He wasn't skating like himself. He wasn't getting into those areas that he normally does. Wasn't winning the puck battles like he does. Clear evidence of an injury now that we all know that that was what, in fact, what was happening. But yeah, for him to surge back like he has, I mean, he extended his home point streak to 10 games as well. I mean, just really insurmountable things, and to have another 40 goal year is tremendous. And the thing that you love about Kirill, Judd, I know you were there in the post game scrum last night too, is you ask him, oh, you're getting there, you're nearing 40. He's like, yeah, how many do I actually have? Like 38 or 39? Oh, 39, I think. So they now, you know, whereas you hear about some players that are stat checking, and we know some that used to do that as well. But yeah, God bless Kirill. I agree with you, Judd. It's the more impressive just for him to not only pick up the pace, but almost continue. Like, he never let it deter him. And I think that's just the type of player Kirill is.
What do you think?
And I think the thing about that is, like, he's at 41 now with 5 games left.
Yep.
It would be a stretch, but I would not be shocked if we, you know, not this coming, but the following Thursday against the Kraken, he pots like 2 and you're like, wow, he got to 50. How did he do that? Like, he's been on such a tear lately.
His time on ice is incredible. He double shifted the entire game, which I'm a little bit concerned about against bad teams, though, because they have nothing to lose by taking cheap shots. But yeah, Age, you're right.
He's just been on such a tear. And like, now that we have seen him, like Jesse said, everybody and their mother was like, what's going on with Kirill? What's wrong in 97? I'm in that boat as well, because it was like something was clearly wrong. Whatever monkey was there, whatever injury bug was there, he's since shifted or he's adjusted his game, and you've seen him now. God, it's just like, it's exactly what Wild fans came accustomed to his first year, where he's just been, I mean, he just wills this team into winning positions, wills them. And you saw it today, 2 goals. You saw it yesterday. It was competitive because of him. Yesterday, the Jets beat Kirill Kaprizov only. Like, that was it. So, it'll be nice to see. And I think this is something that Judd, I was talking to you yesterday as we were watching the game, was like, imagine what he can do once he has a little bit of a better supporting cast behind him, because you saw it yesterday with the Jets. That fourth line of, I want to say, Barron, Iafallo, and Namestnikov, they were just pests, just making his life hell every single shift, trying to put the body on. And granted, you saw how much he rose above them too, scoring two goals. But when you have a team that has to worry about more than just one line that has Kirill Kaprizov on it, he's going to be able to open his game up more and be able to exploit the weaknesses of other teams rather than just he gets paired up against defensive lockdown lines every single time he's out there.
You're right. I mean, it's Kirill Kaprizov and nobody else really on the way. You know, and Matt Boldy, I know the other night, I think it was Vegas, Bruce Cassidy had said those are the two guys that they were honing in on, right? And I think so. Matt Boldy's putting himself in that conversation. It is reminiscent, you guys. So obviously, Kirill's debut here in the NHL, there were no fans, right? Because it was coming off COVID. They were returning to the rink, but he didn't have the fans. Year number two, he had a slow start as well. And I will never forget, because Kirill said in his very broken English to us, "We had the fans, they hate me." And I was like, "Wait, did you mean to say hate?" And he goes, "Yeah, they hate me because I didn't score right away." So I'd have to go back and double check. He might have had a slower start then too, right? I think it's very possible that maybe October he just kind of starts building that momentum regardless. That's a thing that players can do. Look at Nathan MacKinnon just turning things up like crazy. I mean, there's no problem. The nice thing about that is, you know, Kirill will come through, and he's proven that year after year, and this year can be the most recent example.
So I think he does start slow. Like I think that's right. Now what's weird is he starts slow, but he still gets points, but the goals don't come. But Jesse, you said it perfectly. The thing that stuck out to me for a prolonged time, and it's true now, in my opinion, the one thing that he hasn't got back was his skating. Like I remember describing to Dex for Kirill's first 2 years, he can skate. I believe the term I used was in a phone booth, because he edges so it's just like so this, good. Like he turns his edges and for him, it's simple. I mean, the majority of us, our legs would just break and we die. But Kaprizov would edge like that. And it was incredible. I swear to God, he has not done that as much now. And I think it's because off of the Logan Stanley hit, not yesterday, but a year ago, he got folded like an accordion. And I think he was hurt. And my guess is, I think his summertime training is probably nuts, and he probably couldn't do all that. So my contention is we have not seen him as the skater that he can be for the majority of this season. And again, he still got the points. Okay, the second good thing is this, and I hope I've seen tweets about this. I've seen speculation because of the fact that obviously there's all these stupid contract extensions in place that have no move and no trade clauses. I've seen some speculation that the Wild might make a move and trade Marco Rossi this summer. I hope to God that that's absolutely wrong. And I will say this, 21 goals. We would be talking about him a lot if Brock was not so damn good, but for a guy who, you know, Jesse, a year ago, we were talking about, he's got to play this year. He's got to produce this year. What do you do? Came back stronger. My God, if he hadn't missed on scoring chances this season that I think he will convert on next year, the dude could have 30 plus goals. Marco Rossi has been a great story for a guy who not too long ago, I think we all assumed at the 9th pick in his draft might be a first round bust.
Yeah, I mean, he is the Minnesota Wild Masterton nominee for a reason, because of that perseverance. And I will own up to it. I said last year, you should trade him. Now I wasn't necessarily saying it was because he was going to be a bust. I said this year was going to determine that. And certainly he's proven to be anything but. But I also think it was because last year there was a value still in him. And I was like, if you don't have the belief of the organization behind him, that's why I think last year would have been the time to do it. There's no way in HE double hockey sticks you are trading Marco Rossi now, because you need to rely on these young players like Marco. And he's proven it. He's earned his spot. You think Bill Guerin hasn't recognized all the sacrifices that Marco made in order to become the player that he is? Not only has he missed, you know, unfortunate bounces and whatnot, but he's got Ryan Hartman to blame for a bunch of offside goals recalled. I think he leads the team in goals recalled as well. It's happened to him a number of times. And you're right. I think if Brock wasn't on this team, it's Marco that we are clamoring. And you can't forget, he is very much in the Calder conversation along with Brock and Connor Bedard too. It's just, he doesn't get the fanfare that those two are getting. And that's unfortunate, but Marco Rossi has just done everything right this year. He did everything the organization asked. So I think they would never pull the plug and give up on him unless there is an absolute package and haul, which you're probably not going to get, right? I mean, I think he's very valuable here. I don't know how valuable he would be elsewhere, frankly. So I think Marco is here to stay, hopefully gets a nice little contract extension that is in a fair range too, right? I think there's still another level of him that hopefully we get to see next year and even 2 years down the road when there's some more money to put players around him.
All right. And the last thing is this. Can we please, for the love of all that's good, give Brock Faber the Calder? Like, I ordinarily don't get stuck on this type of crap, but you know, first of all, that drop pass in front of Bedard was Bedardian today, and now Kirill's Kirill. So, but I mean, that pass, he drew two guys to him, two Blackhawks to him, and then made a phenomenal pass. He has played yeoman's ice time. He's tired, but I mean, my God, he should be. But I don't see, and I know Bedard's going to be the better player. I know that if you put highlight reel against highlight reel for this season, that Connor's got more cool stuff to show you. But I'm sorry, this is one that I'm stuck on. Brock Faber deserves the Calder 1,000%. And I will ask you this. So I've seen this, you know, with the pro Faber camp has tried to put Bedard's absolutely atrocious plus minus stats out there. And I don't really like that stat. I mean, the Blackhawks are terrible.
I love that stat. Come on, Judd. It's
the Blackhawks are terrible. I'm not a huge fan of that. But anyway, but here's my point. Let's just ask one simple question. Where would the Blackhawks be without Connor? And where would the Wild be without Brock? The Blackhawks can't get much worse. The Wild would be much worse. Like, the Blackhawks are atrocious, and if you took Connor off the... Now, the franchise would have no hope, and now they do have hope. But I'm just saying, in their rookie seasons, if you take Bedard off the Blackhawks, they're atrocious. And they're atrocious right now. But AJ, if you take Brock Faber off this Wild team, I dare I say they're pretty damn atrocious. And instead, they've got a fighting chance to end up hang the banner in the top non wild card spot in the West. And I can guarantee you now the Wild would have a much better draft pick if Brock Faber was not on this team. And that is a compliment, AJ, to Brock Faber.
Oh, absolutely. And think about, just like we talked about earlier, thrusting potentially, yes, Revolstead into the spotlight and everything. Think about what Brock Faber has to do as a rookie this season. Captain of the Minnesota Wild, Jared Spurgeon, a guy that has kind of solidified himself as a minutes eater. He's on the ice a lot. He's been a sound presence, out for the season. Okay, Brock, you're gonna have to step up. You're gonna have to help out here. Jonas Brodin, kind of at that point regarded as the best defenseman on the Wild in Spurgeon's absence, and I think probably even before that. Guess what? He gets hurt for an extended period of time. Hey, Brock, we're gonna add another 6 minutes of ice time onto you every single game. So you're gonna be pushing half an hour. Is that all right with you? You're fueled up on Chipotle? Perfect. Hope so, because you're going to need it. He's been so good. I mean, how many times have we met the quota per JHS of just praising Brock Faber? I think we're on about 80 consecutive shows here where it's, you know, we've met that quota, and rightfully so, because of just how good he is. If this team didn't have him and you had to have a guy like Alex Goligoski probably step up a little bit more, John Merrill step up a little bit more, and Jesse, your eyes widen right there for a good reason, because that defensive core would be on par of that of the Chicago Blackhawks, the San Jose Sharks. I would feel terrible for a Marc-Andre Fleury, a Philip Gustafson, because they'd be getting shelled on a nightly basis, just breakdown after breakdown. You'd be getting these guys hung out to dry. Brock Faber has added a calmness, a leadership, a reliability to the blue line from the Minnesota Wild. And Judd, you're exactly right. If you take him away, this team loses point after point, game after game, and they look like a defensive disaster. He elevates them to a level where Connor Bedard, yes, 6 years from now, people are going to pull up this clip and they're going to say, like, these guys are a bunch of idiots. How could they look at Bedard? He just scored his 103rd point of the season and we're only halfway through at the All-Star break, whatever. Let's pump the brakes here. It's based off this season. This team without Brock Faber is a dumpster fire Chicago would be essentially the same thing. They're battling for Celebrini as is. It goes to like the MVP. Is it valuable to that team or is it just like the best player? It's that argument. And I think you have to look at what Brock Faber has done for the Wild this year compared to what Bedard has done.
I love the discourse in general, right? Because Connor Bedard is the flashy player. He's the sexy player. He is the NHL's darling. He is that number one pick. But this is my last make thing, because everything AJ said is absolutely right. Connor McDavid did not win the Calder his year, right? I mean, Sidney Crosby did not win. It's not guaranteed. It's not meant to say, hey, look at our first round pick and look at how special he truly is. I mean, There are other players that are nominated for this for a reason. And there's no question that Brock Faber is going to be in that final three. You know, it's hard for defensemen, but Moritz Seider did it for Detroit a couple years back. You obviously have Cale Makar, because I think in general, people like the goals. You like the flashiness. And Connor Bedard has had a tremendous year as well. But I think, you know, you got to bow down to what Brock Faber has done, what Brock Faber means to this team. And I think Brock Faber is your Calder winner. And that's not even from a biased Minnesota perspective. I think that's from just a person that enjoys hockey. I think what Brock Faber has done elevates himself above Connor Bedard. So that is my final 2 cents. Mic drop.
You're exactly right. She's exactly right. And with that, we will bid you adieu. I'm Judd. She's Jesse. He's AJ. We'll talk to you soon.